Welcome to Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsomi, a passionate and relentless pursuit of exploring how individuals use good judgment in everyday life, both in their personal and professional lives. There is a quote that says, being a pathfinder is to be willing to risk failure and still go on. Playing on the surname of my guest today, Ndlela, which is isiZulu, meaning a physical path or a way you do something or a manner a person conducts themselves, their style or behavior, whichever meaning you ascribe her surname, Siphe Sihle, which we call Sihle for short, Penny Ndlela has her own unique, distinguishable way of moving through this life. Sihle originally hails from Empangeni in northern KwaZulu-Natal, but grew up in Esikhaweni near Bangeni. She says money has never been the driver for the ventures she pursues in business because it comes in abundance when you find purpose. Sihle is a serial entrepreneur and in the late 1990s joined Lemon & Lime, a customized gifting company which evolved into an integrated communications and marketing business. She bought out her partner in 2000 and later exited and sold the business in 2009. In 2013, she started Soul Traveler, a faith-based group traveling experience for the black market in South Africa. It was her first tourism venture and became a member of the Tebe Tourism Group, the first group travel tour operator in South Africa focused on the domestic market. Hey, my friend, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We will think we're living in different continents.
I know.
The way it's going.
I know.
Yeah, but thank you for making the time.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah. Before we get into our conversation, you were just telling me now about the outfit. Just give me
some feedback on that. Well, I arrived from Cape Town on Friday, and one of the reasons I'm here this weekend is for the R&B Latitudes Art Fair. Reason being, we have art-inspired curated tours through the continent. And so for the last 3 years, we've been going to Artex in Lagos, Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of this visit for the Latitudes Art Fair was to do an art walk and to meet prospective travelers so that we just give them a lowdown of what we'll be doing in Lagos, what they can expect from the curated experience, as well as just arming them with information about the galleries that we'll be exhibiting and the kind of art that they can expect.
Yeah.
So we use art as a passion point, as a gateway to a culture or place. Mm. So you don't have to be an art enthusiast.
Yeah, or collector.
No collector. Yeah. And actually, if you have one piece, you're a collector. Mm. And the idea is beauty is something that attracts everybody. And so this is a great segue to immerse yourself in a new culture, in a new city. But we've just now partnered with R&B Latitudes as a way to have that initial conversation so that when you are signing up for the experience, you kind of know what you're going to expect, and you don't have those lingering questions like, I don't know enough about art, I'm fearful of a new place. And yeah,
that's fun.
Yes.
Which is a perfect way to start this, because somebody from Esikhaweni in this kind of
yes
I mean this is part of the wisdom we're trying to share.
Yes.
That, because I think sometimes we think a place decides your journey.
Who you are, yes.
And who you are.
Yes.
And you can be from Esikhaweni and still have this lifestyle and these passions.
Yes.
So you grew up in Esikhaweni.
Yes.
But were you born there?
No. I was born in Stanger.
Yeah.
So my mother is from Gwadugusa in Stanger.
Yeah.
And my dad in a village close by called Grantville. So
the Grantville of our Chief Albert Luthuli, for those that know.
Yes. So because they were young and got married there, I was born there. They then moved to Empangeni. Ngwelezane was the township. Mm-hmm. which I think that's where my brother was born, Nzuzo. And we moved to Eskawini. I think what people don't know about Eskawini is that it was a purpose-built township for middle-class black people.
Sheesh.
So my father worked for a multinational, and during apartheid, employees were given the same allowances as their international counterparts.
Mm.
So housing allowance became a problem because that was a perk. So companies like Nestle, Alusaf, and all those companies then had an agreement with the Afrikaans government to say, why don't you build a corporate township so that people who are there can use their housing allowances?
I did not know this.
I know. A lot of people didn't know that. Oh. So the township I grew up in, I always refer to as like Wisteria Lane. We had tarred roads and everybody...
it's all little world, yeah.
Exactly. And it was just like a slice of a uniqueness in this otherwise horrible time.
Yeah.
So you then had your teachers, lawyers, doctors, judges,
business people
who were affluent. And with their affluence came their curiosity and their disposable income to do all sorts of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is how I grew up. And that's what Eskawini was formed as.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting. And we used to call those Eskawini, Eskawini. We didn't know the history. So you have siblings?
Yes.
You've already mentioned Zundu.
Yes, I've mentioned, yeah. So, so I'm the eldest of three boys. That's actually obviously a
somebody in our room just said,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm the eldest of three boys. I have, three brothers and, my youngest brother is late. Mm. So yeah, I still have three siblings, but
George.
Just the one lives somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yes.
We will never forget him.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
We were very young when we lost him.
Yes.
And what activities did you engage in as a child?
So interestingly, you know, if you live in a well-off township, everybody had a BMX bike.
Mm.
I roller skated a lot. And we lived next to University of Zululand. So I played tennis. I had a tennis coach. I did ballet. In St. Catharines.
Mm-hmm.
And
in primary school.
Yes, yeah. And Kabi Mngoma was obviously at the University of Zululand, and he taught us the violin on Saturdays.
Mm.
So
I did not know the violin part.
Yes, of course. Yeah, played violin and swimming. Because the infrastructure of University of Zululand was there, so we could have all those activities in the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. The violin, I'm still.
I know. You don't know about it because I wasn't technically that good at it.
So you kind of focused on the ballet, which I knew.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yes. So yeah, I focused on the ballet and also just focused on the music.
Yeah.
Classical music till today is
Love
still
it.
One of my favorite things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of an opera that I'd love.
Yes, I'm
as
actually
well.
Going to one on the 31st. So, in Cape Town.
Yeah.
So,
I miss about living in Cape Town.
No, you actually have them here as well. In
not as often.
No, you have them quite often.
Really?
Yes.
I'm just not keeping up to date.
No, I realize Joburg people just don't keep up to date with what's going on.
No, I was very good in Cape Town.
Yes.
It was like a regular thing.
Yes.
So the two core values that you think influence and shape who you are, what are those and how do they guide you in the way you conduct your life?
I really love that question because, you know, it's very easy to be broad about it because it gave me time just to hone in on the two that I prioritize that are the thread in my life. And I would say authenticity and curiosity. For me, those are my guiding principles. I believe for me, being authentic with self allows me to take accountability for my life and the decisions that I make and arriving in confidence as who I am. Without the pressure of trying to be somebody else or something else.
Mm.
So that for me is important. And curiosity, because the way that I grew up was so unusual that unlocked a sense of self that the world is bigger than I could ever imagine. And I wanted to engage with the world. It gave me a sort of like a moral or like a compass to say the world is big. Do not fear it. You have permission to explore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. We will not go to the fact that her surname is also Tlela.
Yes.
But anyway.
Yes.
When we talk about ways and paths.
Yes. Yes. My surname actually, my mother, often says to me, the way that you travel, it seems like you're possessed by your surname.
Yes.
Which means the way. Yeah. So I'm always
on the road.
At an airport near you.
Yeah. So you are very close to your father.
Yes.
Uncle, who we miss dearly. Mm. How has his death during the most challenging period of COVID-19 impacted how you love yourself since his passing?
Yeah, I think asking me how I love myself was actually quite crucial, because it took his death for me to realize that I had outsourced loving me to him.
I know, which is why I asked this question, because
he
loved you so much.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
There was no need for me to add. There's no notes. He loved me for all of me as I am all my life. And I relished in being a daddy's girl. I relished in his validation. It's actually what framed my perspective and how I moved through the world. And his death, a part of me died. Mm. And that part of me was the girl who had no ability to show herself self-love. And it floored me. It's taken me years to actually get up, be here, and sit and have a conversation without breaking down. And because I've had to relearn how to radically love myself and therefore tap into that value of authenticity and accept that loving myself is my job.
Yeah.
And nobody else's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was a special relationship.
Yes, yes. And I'm really grateful. I mean, I think I won the father lottery in this lifetime.
Well, we can compete with that.
I don't know. Yeah, but it's actually wonderful that we can say we can compete with that. Yeah, we were loved.
So
because
loved. Yeah.
That feeling enables you to move through the world with a confidence that, that's tangible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know when you don't feel the love.
Yes.
Because you have felt it.
Yes.
That's what I always say to people.
Yes. Yes.
What is the truth about yourself that you've only come to accept in recent years?
That I'm strong. And I've had to radically accept that.
It's interesting that you think that now. We always thought you were.
I know. because I faked it so well.
Yes. Yeah,
I did. And it's taken a lot of life blows, I guess, to actually realize that my strength doesn't come from responding to a circumstance. That's a different kind of strength. All of us are strong when we are put in a situation that we have to respond with strength. I think the strength that I'm talking about is that innate invincibleness that I can do or be anything that I put my mind to. So it comes from a place of abundance, and it doesn't come from a place of lack or survival. It's just an innate strength that I can move through the world accepting that life is benevolent and I can trust life because it doesn't require me to do anything. I just am.
Just flow through
just
it.
Just flow through it.
Yep.
Yes.
It's almost like you, this is great, because after this conversation, you'll be a guest mentor for my cohort 3.
Oh, it's fine.
This is how we do it.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Of course. It's our time now to give back.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, because sometimes when I say these things, they're like, and then another person says it, okay.
Yes, yes, yeah. I mean, and I wonder if we would have listened at the time. Because, you know, there's so many things as a young person that you have to have the life experience for it to resonate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I used to kind of say, why go through the pain? I can always learn and believe. I think that's what has been slightly different in my journey.
Yeah.
Because I've kind of respected, which is why I enjoy mentorship.
Yes.
Because you can learn from somebody else's experience. You don't always have to experience it yourself.
I did not have that. I, unfortunately, as a young person, my confidence and stupidity was like, I know everything.
Yeah.
You know, and the older me has now accepted that I know nothing.
Yeah.
And now open to learning and listening.
Anyway, what have you, this is the perfect question, like the universe, you see, it's guiding it. What have you evolved to believe in your adulthood that you, your younger self would never expect or even disapprove of? What do you think it will disapprove of?
My younger self will disapprove of the pace that I now live my life, which is a lot slower. I believed everything has to be rushed. All the goals, everything. Like clockwork. I walk fast. I drive fast. I get to a thing fast. I want to end the conversation fast. Is this an invoiceable opportunity? I'm already ending it and without being in it. So my adult self, well, my younger self would not believe that I've now come here.
Oh my God, you're still be successful at this pace.
Exactly. And just and realizing that I actually don't have to rush and that life has many iterations. I don't have to have it figured out all at once by the age of 25. You know, and that there's many chapters and that if I give myself permission, I can start over many times.
Yeah.
And I think my younger self would not have believed that because it had a sort of like a structure and goals and objectives that I had to meet by a certain age and criteria. And if I didn't meet those, the critical self will be judging.
Like
crazy.
Behind.
And one of the biggest lessons, and I think we touched on it before, was letting go of control.
Yeah.
That's my adult self has let go of that and surrendered to life and resigned as the manager of the universe. I actually literally wrote the resignation.
Is it?
Because my relationship with controlling things. Anyway, we're going to talk about my marriages, so we might as well just start now. My second marriage was so structured, the wedding itself. My father was on page 17 and his role of what he had to do for the day. And he just looked at me like so upset. He's like, should we all just get back into our spots? Is there no room for just enjoyment in this thing? Are you going to tell us where to sit, where to stand, when to laugh, when to do this?
Yeah.
And I realized that actually this is a problem.
Yes.
There's no ability for enjoyment if you're busy controlling
everything. We were enjoying ourselves. Who were the guests?
No, because I had already controlled what you would be doing. I had already determined. Remember, I had an events company for a long time. My business was hurting people. And knowing how they respond in every moment.
You knew how
we would respond. So it was like you're a choir and I'm the conductor. And I say when your temperament goes up or down. So now I have resigned.
Like, oh, yes. This is amazing. The resignation letter.
Resignation letter.
For the books people.
Yes, please. Yeah.
And perfect segue into this. You have been a serial entrepreneur since 1999.
Yes.
Your company, Lemon and Lime, which was an integrated communications and marketing business, which is exactly why you know how to.
Yes.
What inspires your entrepreneurial spirit?
It actually, I got into entrepreneurship reluctantly. But what inspires it is that my father was an entrepreneur. We worked in his business throughout my high school. and we were paid with holidays. And I used to be resentful because I would do all the work and my brothers and everybody would still go on the holiday. So he had a license to run a country club just outside Empangeni. And it had a restaurant and it had a stadium. And we would hold concerts. You know, we used to call ourselves like the Dome. We would hold concerts with Brenda Fassie, Mahodela Queens. It would be packed with people. We would be the ones that take the cash for the ticketing. We would count boxes of money. My brothers would be in charge of taking stock. So it was a family business that we were all involved in. Mm. I did not enjoy that because we had no free time. After school, I would put on my apron and I would waiter. Mm. And weekends, you've got concerts, there's activities, you've got to run all the different departments within that country club. And so I think I'd vow that I'm definitely not going to do that.
It made you a very great hostess.
Yes,
because
it did.
We did enjoy your events.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, the intelligent universe knew what it was shaping. Mm. And so by the time I had Lemon and Lime Marketing, I already had the skills and that I was raised with and could then offer that service to my clients, blue chip companies and international companies. Oh. Yeah.
We were recipients of that in one business of mine.
Yes.
I was a CEO. It wasn't my business at that time. So you're also the founder and chief executive of Soul Traveler that you established in 2013 as an international faith-based traveling experience for the black market, which is interesting in itself. Mm. Why was it important for you that you create such a focus for your business?
When I had Lemon and Lime Marketing, which eventually had international clients, clients like Louis Vuitton that were arriving on the continent, Salvatore Ferragamo and other luxury brands, I realized that it was a unique time in South Africa. There was obviously a lot of people getting into business that were black, a lot of international companies asking for service from black companies and actually arriving and asking, where are the black people? By the time I sold the business and actually burnt out, that's really what happened. I sold the business and took some time out. Soul Traveler came about from a friend who was actually working in Palestine at the time and said to me, listen, you know, South Africans are so religious. But yet I actually don't see them traveling here to the Holy Land. I wonder why that is. And maybe you could start a business. Maybe that could be the new thing that you do. And I just thought, religion, Holy Land, never.
Because we know you as the lifestyle queen.
Exactly. I'm like, no, definitely that's not going to be me. But and he said, just come over. I went and spent 2 weeks. And I was fascinated by the process and business of tourism. I had not seen that before as all the elements and its powerful impact. And realizing that I traveled for my own personal reasons and accepting that travel is one of those investments that you are guaranteed a return. It's the best way to learn other cultures. It's actually a best way to interrogate your own knowledge, your own biases, in such a unique way, a soft way, actually a compassionate way and a vulnerable way. And when I got back, I realized that this subject of religion and faith is something that is so close to our black people. And nothing had been done for them to connect with this that is so important to them. And that's how I started with identifying the target market and obviously identifying the place that this tourism experience would happen and curating experiences that were just not about religion, but started to be more culturally immersive. And being aware that our people, my business had been doing so much of hand-holding and hosting for white market, but nothing had been done for us. And that we also needed our hands held in unfamiliar places. So I went back into my marketing and communication capabilities, created these experiences like an event with control, and created new itineraries.
Yeah.
And went into churches on a Sunday, after Sunday, partnered with the mega churches and started to travel with groups, because something else was that, you know, people would buy a package from a tour operator, but the tour operator that they dealt with would never be with them. So never understood the nuances of what it means to be a black South African in a foreign environment when 20 years ago you were not allowed to travel. You know, we were just not allowed to travel, even within our own country. So not only was our country foreign, the world is foreign and the world is scary. And having me on the trip had such incredible impact that even I was overwhelmed and didn't realize how important that was.
Because we take it for granted, because you've just been traveling as a young person.
Yes.
So
yes,
you don't actually understand that there is a whole population that doesn't do
that. Yes, absolutely. And the anxiety that actually comes with travel. And we just assume people must just get on with it. And people don't. And if you look at our tourism figures in South Africa, domestic tourism is in single digits in terms of percentage-wise, which is ridiculous. And globally, markets that do well in tourism are in high digits, double digits. And that's what we need to change, because you need to actually give people the chance to be vulnerable, to say what they're scared of, and provide them the service of holding their hand through unfamiliar territories.
Mm. Amazing. So outside of Palestine, did you have other destinations? Which is the most popular journey?
And so we went to Egypt, India, Istanbul, Turkey. Quite a few.
Yeah.
Quite a few around
which
the world.
Which holds significance for?
Firstly, I mean, I think, so what happened was faith was the passion point. And then eventually, so throughout my soul traveler career, I've traveled with more than 1,000 people. Hmm. Actually, I can't count. And all those WhatsApp groups are still alive today since 2012, 2013. And over time, people gained confidence and I had a database and they would ask for more.
Okay.
They would ask for, I mean, we went to Brazil. I'm going back to Brazil again with a group of 50 towards the end of the year. So the scope just became wider. And
did you say 15 or 50?
50.
Wow.
I would have 50 within a group. So my group size would be from 6 to 50. And it's incredible. It's easier to manage the 50 than the 6. Yeah. So, and I think what was exciting for me was just those eyes that would be opened in a new environment, taking in all this information and taking like just that incredible awakening, that curiosity and realizing that, oh, okay, I've done this. Where else are we going?
Yeah.
So it slowly moved from faith-based travel to cultural immersive travel.
Yeah.
Then Soul Traveler did a major pivot. Because by then I realized everything that we've gone for around the world is available in our own country. But we as South Africans, white South Africans, had decided that they've got their places. So December, it's Plet, Belito, and nothing in between. And black people, it's visiting friends and family. So you just go back to the provinces that you came from. And within the tourism sector, we were referred to as visiting friends and family, and tourists were seen as inbound travelers. So we, as South Africans, no matter what race you are, were not a viable market marketed to in a way that addresses the trauma that we've gone through in the past. That you don't, whether you're white, black, or Indian, or colored, you don't necessarily feel emotionally safe moving through our country, different places within our country. And it's not because those perspectives are valid. It's just a feeling.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to create that sense of safety within South Africa. And I wanted the groups to be multicultural, that we have the same starting point before a tour starts.
Yeah.
And that same starting point is, I don't know. I don't know my country. I don't know you. I'm Zulu, and I don't know what it's like to be Xhosa. I've never interacted with Bedi people before. I don't even know what they eat for breakfast. And I would ask this question. I'd say, quickly, in France, everybody's having a croissant. And in Italy, we're all having pasta. Ask a South African, what is a Bedi person having for breakfast? Nobody knows.
Mm.
For breakfast.
Dini? I don't know. What do we have for
breakfast? No. And yeah, I mean, they have their own cuisine, and but it's just that curiosity.
Yes,
to know never your own people that you live by. And for me, that moment came in through I was in Jericho, you know, Jericho City in the Middle East, and we were on a long bus ride, and we had those iPods then. And the bus driver said to me, so we're listening to his folk music and we're all dancing in the bus and it's just like an enjoyable time. And he says to me, Penny, why don't we put on your folk music? And I thought, oh, I don't have that. He says, what do you mean? what do you mean you don't have your folk music?
Yeah.
Is it in your iPod? He says, he just looks like he's confused. And I'm like, A, I don't even know what it is. And B, I never thought to have it.
Mm.
And I felt so embarrassed that because if you're disconnected with you, how can you be connected with your environment, your country, your continent, everything? And that changed my perspective. And that's when Soul Traveler pivoted to, I will curate experiences that forge that positive citizenry.
Yeah.
And I will curate experiences that allow people to move with the feeling of safety within our own country.
Yeah.
And creating those bonds of connection.
So when you talk safety, you're now making me think of We Are Yentas.
Yes.
Which is a travel search engine and a travel platform that you've designed for women.
Yes.
What does Yentas mean and why did you design such a platform?
So an interesting story. During COVID, travel stopped. So that means that meant if you had a travel business, it was plugged off, an immediate plug off and switched off. And at that time, I would be asked to be involved in international conferences in New York or in different time zones about the plight of tourism during COVID. What does tourism look like post COVID? So in my apartment, I would have these conferences at like 3 a.m. or 2 a.m. And at my table, I would have a scarf. Remember, we would just like present in our pajamas. I would have a scarf, lipstick and earrings. And I would get up from my couch and sit on my counter and just speak to the camera. Hi, my name is Penny. And this conference could be anywhere around the world. And then one day I'm sleeping on the couch, but I'd forgotten that I don't have a presentation.
Oh.
But something wakes me up. And so I want to speak to the fact that letting go and surrendering to the universe and the creativity that can flow from that connection. I suddenly wake up and it's like I'm channeled an idea.
Mm.
And that's never happened to me before. I get up, I open my laptop and I write a 3-page business idea. And I look at it, but it's like, it's an out-of-body experience. I look at it and I go, God, it's a tech business. Jeez, I can barely send an email. This is crazy. And I slam my computer and I think I'm sleepwalking and I go back to sleep. When I wake up, I read it again and I realize that thing is still there. I wasn't dreaming. And it is a tech business. Complete with how it should be monetized. And we were allowed to have walks at that time when this happened. And I meet a friend and I go, you won't believe this bizarre thing happened. I mean, I've been in business since 1999. I've never actually, I just start the business and I just go, who am I going to invoice? And I just go.
Yeah.
But this is new. And she goes, is it tech? She says, oh, you won't believe it. But one of our design thinking professors has been consulting to tech businesses. Why doesn't he take a look at it? And if it's nothing, it's nothing. If it's something, he will let you know. Send it to him. He's free. He has time. I send it to him. He asks immediately to speak to me. He says, this is something you should continue.
Yes.
And since then, the universe has provided for this tech platform to finally be what it is today.
Yeah.
Right up to the name. So,
Yentes, so I got it on IG. Look at it on IG.
Yes. So Yentes means in Yiddish, which goes back to my soul traveler days. It means a woman who knows everything. She is an oracle. And Yenta is Siswati for to act, to do, as in Yenza. And it was honestly the culmination of my life's work and who I am. And so after that, through consultation with tech businesses and people in the design thinking space, we then took that 3-page document, did proper research using data from my soul travelers, interviewing them and doing incredible work to ascertain what are the pain points of travel.
Yeah.
And so through all that data, it came out that the pain points of travel are feeling safe and women needing to feel safe in environments, and that women make decisions to travel, whether in a solo capacity or within a family environment, they use recommendations from other women.
Yeah.
So it meant that the internet and all its searches was not enough for women to feel safe that, would you recommend this place? And safety is not necessarily physical. It's emotional. It's spiritual. It's cycle. It's life stage. It's my family. It's my time. Will I rest? Will I enjoy it? So a woman asks another woman because another woman understands what she means in that question.
Yeah.
So we then built the app. So it's a web platform. And what the app does, it's like Bumble meets Spotify. Bumble meaning that, you know, it's female-based, and you're able to do matchmaking and finding people who travel like you globally. And Spotify is for genre and personalization.
Yeah.
So it's user-generated content. You upload a list of your previous travel. So it takes the travel cycle from previous travel to being travel and post-travel.
Mm.
So you upload your travel list, so whatever your favorite city was, and you only upload the things that you loved so that another woman may be able to add that to her itinerary.
Yeah.
And so there's a matchmaking process. So if you love bird watching and hiking and I like sipping cocktails and being on the beach, I'm not going to see your list. Mm. I'm only going to see the lists of people that are
aligned to
my preferences.
Interesting life.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's been an incredible 4-year journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're having lots of fun.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
I know you live to the beat of your own drum. However, have you faced judgment for divorcing twice? What was the wisdom that you can share with someone watching now who is staying in an unbearable situation because they fear other people will judge them?
You know, that divorcing twice bit was kind of judgy.
It was. It was.
No, it's fine. You know, I have a good relationship with that word.
Yeah.
And because to me, it means completion. I think that if I look at my two husbands, my first husband was a master builder. We were married very young.
Mm.
And so that was a time for me to have a rigorous mirror of friction so that I could polish and become my next self. So I view relationships as an opportunity to grow. I view marriage as a container, a sacred space that allows you to fully immerse everything, because marriage questions your every being. Whereas in a relationship that's outside of a marriage, there's always that something at the back that, oh, I can leave. But with marriage, you've actually made a commitment to a forever. And the forever remains, because whether you live with them or don't, the forever stays, because the person you were when you met them and the person you leave behind when that relationship is complete continues to live with you. So the relationship changes. And I was always fascinated, because when you actually divorce and you go to court, they don't use the word divorce. It says change of marital regime.
Oh, okay.
And that in itself is the way it all matters, because the marital regime is there. It's just, it just changes. So he was a master builder and my second husband, a master healer. And in that master healing is that I needed to go through a process where I needed to learn how to love myself, having had a father who loved me in high definition and having not learned how to do it myself. The master healer arrived so that he could teach me how to actually do that in soft ways. So what happens with people who stay is the fear that you're still blaming the person or the marriage or using others as your voice instead of having that critical analysis of who am I, how am I showing up in the world, and am I serving my best self? Because even in religion, whether you're religious or not, Jesus himself said, my peace I leave you. So if it's the only thing he left, he didn't leave other things. He left you peace. So if you don't have peace within your life and that peace is being taken away by a circumstance, be it marriage, be it a job, be it whatever, a place, then you're not a tree. You have every right to move and make another decision. But just remember that that critical person, because by the time others judge you, you have judged yourself so harshly that they are just mirroring what is going on the inside. And once you can let go of that critic, you will silence those external judgments. And to be honest, that's just your ego talking. You assume that people give you that much attention.
Yeah.
People are busy with their own lives. If they think about you, it's 3 seconds and then they're onto their own problems. So you have to disarm that ego and you have to accept that it's your own narcissistic ways of thinking, oh gosh, I can't do this. I'm supposed to be this incredible person or a role model of sorts. No.
And you're still a role model. Who cares?
Be a role model to you.
Yes.
You are the only thing that in counts, your world. Yeah. Yes, that's it. So you need your world, your internal world needs to be in a place of peace. And, you know, my second marriage had the most beautiful ending. And right up to when we went to court. And for me, it taught me that you can end things beautifully.
Yeah.
As you start them beautifully, you can end them beautifully.
Because you're not separating because you hate each other.
No.
It just has come to an end.
Yes, yeah. It's come to, it's a transition. Mm. So should you stay in primary school because you really love that teacher of yours? You know, you have to go to high school.
Yeah.
And there too, you then have to go to university. So life keeps moving forward, but we sort of hold on to these things and aspects of ourselves where if you just release and let go, so much can.
And we break things while we're holding on so much.
Yes,
yeah.
We do.
You're a mother of two tax-paying citizens, as you refer to them
yes.
As. What has raising men taught you about womanhood?
Oh, that they are different. Mm. boys are different. And I can say that because I was raised with boys. And yeah. So for me, my inclination is to really understand men more than I can understand women. Women for me has taken a lot of time. My own, and actually having a relationship with my own womanhood has taken time. The wonderful thing about men is that they are simple. The wonderful thing about men is that they know how to self-preserve. And they arrive in life knowing that, which is something women don't have. We take on deferred invisible labor. It's just, we're just born like that. If something is needed, a woman's going to stand up first and get that done. The guy's going to carry on playing his game, and he's not even going to think that that's required from him. So they have a built-in self-preservation thing, and we have a built-in receiver of this invisible labor that's deferred to us. So we become tired and resentful, and they become energized and creative. And raising my sons, because as my brothers say, I'd had the internship of being a deputy parent and co-parent with my parents, being the eldest, I kind of felt equipped to kind of know how to navigate, even though I was a very young mother. And what's fascinating about boys is that they have a great relationship with failure. So because they will try and test, they will break things and rebuild, break, rebuild. So from the outset of raising them, I had to tell the truth. I had to tell the truth that this part I know, that part I don't know. And in our relationship, I know more than them because I'm the mother. So I will be honest and say this part I don't know, but I'm the one that's going to figure out. And I'm the one in charge, and I'm going to navigate this path. And that was really wonderful. And my sons are my friends and my companions and my joy and my greatest teachers. And one of the things that they said, because when we got divorced with their dad, they were 11 and 6 at the time. And I was actually 32, so very young. And again, that rushing girl that needs to get married at 5, have a business by 4, and all those things. I had a discussion with them to say, well, this marriage is not ending. And they were perceptive to say, you're not mom, you were not compatible. And they were 11 and 6.
And I remember you telling us that we were like,
and
wow.
I was like, whoa. They're like, no, we could have told you for R5,000, you were not compatible. And you know, now, as they say, they've told their father, they say, you know, there's confirmation of death and taxes. The third thing is that the parents will not be together again. but what they said is they asked me one thing, because I had to prepare them and I'd gone for therapy to prepare them for this change. My younger son said, we have a few fears, and if we can address them with you. And I said, of course. And their questions were, will we see him? Oh. And which I answered, absolutely. It doesn't matter the circumstance. Mm. You'll always have access to him. And then they said, you are going to raise us. We want to know if we're going to be raised by an angry woman.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I can't even.
Yeah.
Oh,
and or a woman.
Lisiva and Dewey, you just so, you should be sitting there.
Yeah. And that like obviously floored me because I thought, wow, it's a valid question, you know. And I said to them, listen, I have a great relationship with my father. I do love men and I think men are great. And so that's the part of me that you're getting.
Yeah.
And that's the part of me that's going to raise you. But I'm still in charge.
Yeah.
And you would have to listen to the way that things are going to happen around here.
Yeah.
And we then discussed ways of communication. And that open communication has continued throughout me mothering them.
Yeah.
And throughout me having the various different stages of their own lives, because I was growing too. Mm. We've grown together in different stages. And yeah. So,
gosh, they are amazing human beings.
Yes, I always say they arrived like that.
Yeah. I always remember going with Dewey. I think he was 4 or 5 to a movie.
Yes.
Patch Adams. It was Robin Williams, I remember.
Oh, yes.
I have never seen a young child so attentive. Like,
yes.
And I was like, what is he taking in? Yes. But he was really focused.
Yes, yeah.
Amazing brain. Yeah. Anyway, almost done, but I just want to ask you this. If someone is watching this conversation 30 years from now, what do you hope they'll understand about these times we are living in, particularly in South Africa?
Mm. I would like them to take away that we are still in transition and that our traumatic past and complex tragedies, trials and tribulations could not be undone in the last 30 years. And that with each aspects that we're doing, this conversation, the businesses that we are starting, the seeds that we are sort of planting, which in 30 years they will get to enjoy. My business, the web platform for women to share safe travel recommendations, is not for my lifetime. It's for my granddaughter's lifetime, and that it will be those intentions that they will get to enjoy. And that as a country, we were determined to move forward together. That as a country with all our kind of difficult, totally divided, because to me, South Africa is actually many countries in one, that there's just that one thread of saying, this is our home. And no matter what is happening, we will always choose this first. And even though it's dynamic and it keeps changing, we have a will and an intention to make it better.
Yeah.
And we want to make it better together. And that we know that we trust our future.
Yeah.
We really do trust what's going to become of this country.
Hmm. So as in closing, what wisdom would you end this conversation with? What would you like to share?
I have learned that my religion has become gratitude. I practice gratitude all day and every day. And I think that if that can be a practice that one takes on, that is something that can hold you in good stead. And then with practicing gratitude, I believe that's where the magic and the miracles lie. Because if you can be open to those, that magic and miracle, you can actually see the divinity and the intelligence of this universe, and that it has a much bigger goal than you could ever imagine, that you as this tiny speck think you can control it. You are just really wasting your time and hurting your head. So focus on gratitude and really believe that life meets you where you are. All you have to do is ensure that where you are is where you're happy being.
Mm.
And therefore, if you're not, move.
Yeah.
Change it.
Yep. And find your alignment with your soul.
Yes,
you are the
Point of attraction.
Yeah.
And the last thing, which is actually linked to my lifestyle and travel style, is travel light.
Hmm.
Travel light through this world. And that means let go of all your emotional baggage. Let go of the things that weigh you down heavily, whatever they may be. Belief systems, biases, people, things, just travel light.
Yeah. And live light. Gosh, I have so much things to get rid of at home.
Yes. Thank you, my friend, master of letting go. What a pleasure.
What a beautiful conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you for making
the
time.
I appreciate your invitation. I've always watched this with great joy, and I'm proud of the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you.
My childhood friend.
Primary school people.
Yes.
Yeah. Hope you have enjoyed this powerhouse from South Africa and that this conversation has inspired you. Until next time, when we speak to another wise African on Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsum. Thank you for listening to this episode of Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsumi. Please also like, follow and subscribe to our channel and share the wisdom with your friends. I would love it if you could rate and review as well. Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsumi is also available on YouTube, Facebook Watch, Apple and Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. Enjoy the wisdom journey.